making a little video of this. So I don't know how many of you saw that the other day. It was falling and it looked like white condensed falling. It was just these beautiful shapes and they were very defined. And so I was recording that. And Parker was near me. And so it's the silence and it's the snow and then it. That is not me breathing, by the way. I've never seen that video. It's such a happy dog, really. Okay, I'm going to also audio record this for anyone that's interested. So we'll have several recordings. One more time, just to be sure we're recording visually.
And it looks like we are. I'm going to.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to all of you. Because when I get ready for one of these classes, I learn so much. And it really forces me to go so deeply into the practices. So you're the agent for my deepening practice because of you and your commitment to be here and me and my commitment to be here. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful exchange. And then
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me? No one can?
No, you're too far away from the microphone.
Oh, I'll speak louder. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Now, whoever just entered, was that you, Sheila? We need you. We need everyone to mute their microphone. We still have people that aren't muted. It's lower left corner. There's a microphone. You need to make sure you're muted and the red line is through the microphone, please. Thank you. So as I was saying, I wanted to thank all of you for making the commitment to be here. I want to thank Gemma because I know she's the cowgirl that rodeoed some of you up here from Lawrence, and so I thank her for that. Woo! And let's just take a few minutes to kind of gather our energies here. I want to thank you for coming early so we could settle in and begin on time.
Sorry, but we can hardly hear you.
Okay, I'm going to turn the microphone up. You might need to.
Well, you should be sitting closer to the microphone because our volume is maximum, but we can't hear you unless you shout.
Unless I shout.
I can't hear you very well either, Nuria. Hi, it's Sheila.
Hi, Annie.
Hi.
I can move the computer. Yeah, let's do that. I wanted to be sure that some of our participants were here and you could see them. I didn't want it to be all about me, but I guess it's going to be all about me. Okay, we're going to change boards real quick. I'm going to do this one because it's longer. Well, we'll begin in a minute. It's like the musician's tuning, right?
Yes.
We're going to get this down. We're working on it, right? We were. It was a little bit rocky last time, and we'll figure it out. You just have to be patient. One of the things that I need to figure out is how to not have that bell ring every time someone enters and exits. So we'll just use that as an opportunity for people to say, oh, the bell has rung. I'm going to go deeper into my meditation. We'll use it to help us. Is that better? Is that better, anyone? You have to unmute.
Much better, thank you.
Okay.
A lot better indeed, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Now I'm just trying to get the, really? It's okay? Because okay.
It's very good here.
Okay.
Clear.
Gemma and myself in the picture. Someone wants to sit there, they can be there. Well, I'm thinking of tuning in because we know that in India, people are gathering there at the special resting place of Pira Murshid, and there's usually about a week of activities and celebration and prayer and singing and offerings and feeding the poor. There's a whole series of activities that go on there, and it's a beautiful environment. It's very serene. Those of you that have been there know that. In the middle of a rather chaotic city of New Delhi. You know, it's like a little oasis as soon as you cross through the doors and into the garden space, and then you rise up some stairs and there's a very quiet place where Murshid Hazratanat Khan's body is at rest. And it really is like an oasis. So we can imagine that in spite of all of this, we're in that oasis as well. And as I said, there'll be bells when people come and go from the class, but it's no different than being in the city and hearing the honk of the cops. So whenever we hear bell, pray harder. So some of us know this prayer. It's called the Sufi invocation. And those of us that know it, let's say it very softly and sweetly together. Listening to the subtlety of each person's voice and feeling as if Murshid himself, we'll say this is his chair, he's guiding us because this is Murshid's class. A deep breath in, and we breathe out. Another deep breath in and out. And pray harder and breathe in and breathe out. Towards the one,
the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance.
And we remind ourselves to pray harder every time that bell rings, because it will be coming and going as people come and go. So today, and I also applaud some of you that aren't familiar with the teachings that you're here, and I'm so happy that you are, because I think it's not just about Sufism, it's definitely also about how we are as human beings, and no one needs a lecture on that, but sometimes we certainly need, I do at least, need reminders. And so I wanted to, again, just for the logistics of this class, may I ask people to mute their microphones when they're not speaking? And do let me know if you can't hear me or if there's any problems from that end. But then if you want to be seen, because we will be sharing this, of course, I hope that's okay with everyone. If not, I'll give you an opportunity to cover up your camera, because I will be sharing this with other people. And you can just be a name there if you don't want to have your picture identified or your image, and again, mute and unmute as you're speaking with the group. Again, I want to thank everyone for being here, because it is it's such an amazing thing to prepare for your presence, and it is a great gift for me to make these preparations and study and be a vehicle for offering them. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
for being the incentive for that and the motivation. These are words of Hazrat Inayat Khan, sometimes called Sufi Inayat Khan, sometimes called Pir Murshid Inayat Khan. Murshid Hidayat asked me to refer to his father as Hazrat Inayat Khan. So I will refer to him in that way. It is the teacher that brought these sort of guidance to us from the East to the West. He himself studied all around the world with many masters. There were various reasons that motivated his studies that took him to study not only with other Sufi masters, but Buddhist masters and Hindu masters. And he loved English. He would greet foreigners and be very excited about helping them to speak English. He was very motivated and had a lot of incentive to learn English. There you go, Parker, good boy. And he would write songs in Hindu language, Muslim, Arabic language, and all different languages. So he was a very universal soul, and his message is one of universality and tolerance and acceptance. And this particular class is titled Things Necessary for a Murid. That's the name of a student, an aspirant on this path of Sufism. Things Necessary for a Murid. I thought perfect that we should receive these words today from Hazrat Inayat Khan, his advice. And he begins it in a very sweet way. He simply says,
if you're touched, he says, my murids, he addresses it. My murids. It is not necessary to explain in words the joy that I feel in coming and seeing you again. For in the initiation, we are so linked together that distance in reality is not a distance. And I just want to stop here because there's this beautiful paper. It's one of the last times he visited the U.S. And he said to his Murid, then, this will be the last time that I will see you. But time and distance and even death will never separate us. So he's here. It is not necessary to explain in words what I feel in coming and seeing you again. For in the initiation, we are so linked together that distance in reality is not a distance. Nevertheless, in this physical plane, to meet together is also necessary. And now I wish to explain how many things are necessary for a murid or a student on this path. Now, anyone that studied Murshid deeply knows he has a special number in his life. Anyone know what that number is? She does. She's heard me say it. Okay, what was the day of the month that he was born on?
Fifth.
And what day did he die on?
Fifth.
And how many elements does he teach us?
Five.
So guess what? There are five things necessary for us on the path. He has a very special connection with that number. He was born on July 5th. He passed on February 5th. And he uses five always as a number. And think about how he integrates that into the Sufi emblem, the five-pointed star. That number is very, very important to him. It's good for us to study it deeply. So he says, and now I wish to explain how many things there are necessary for a murid or student on the path. How many?
Five.
So let's count. The first thing most necessary for a murid is to keep up the spiritual exercises, which are given and without any break. Now we know that we can be challenged by that. Even I'm going now to this spa that I belong to, and the first few days of the new year,
You couldn't get on one of the elliptical machines or the step machines or, you know, I mean, it was really full in the weight room. Everybody was there. And after about a week, there were less people. And now, guess what? There are no people. So, you know, it's hard. We make these commitments. We get really, I want this new practice. But then do we keep to it? And even there, those of you that do your yoga and your exercises, your walking, you know how you reap the benefits from that, but only by doing it. So it's a basic principle of life, right? So he says, not only the first thing, but the most important thing for a Murid, a student on the path, is to try to keep up with the spiritual practices which are given without any break. Murshid says to us, if you're tired, if you were occupied too much, if conditions are not favorable, I do not mean to urge upon you or to burden you. I mean, after all, this is the path of spiritual freedom and liberty. You can choose. But Murshid's advice is to be consistent. Hazard and I goes on to say, I do not mean to urge you or to burden you, but I mean that it is for your betterment to keep those exercises without a gap between them. Consistency. Would you believe, he says, and if I may say so, that the effort of certain practices comes even after 10 years or 12 years? A person with theopatience patience might think, I did not have an immediate result after 1 or 2 months. But one may not think so. If the spiritual practices are like seeds which we sow in the ground, they take root, and after some time a tree comes. But in order for the tree to be fruitful, it can take many years. This is the spiritual sowing. It might take much longer in some cases. In some cases, the next day the result might show. There are some plants and trees which come quicker, and others which take time to bear fruit. So we know this is true, right? We have annuals. And they come to fruition rather quickly when we plant them in the garden in the spring. But what happens? They go away also quickly. Sometimes it takes time to nurture and maturate. One of my friends who has returned to Tibet, Amchak Rinpoche, was someone that was in the inner circle of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and he was a great scholar, and he had a wonderful mind for science and math and economics, and he had had a plan. His Holiness had asked him, can you make again, pray harder when the bell rings, pay attention. He said, can you make a plan for generating revenue for us in South India for the monasteries? And this was at a time when the people were just coming out of Tibet into India. And some of the conditions of the environment, no, I'm very thankful. I know they are too for the Indian government for having given them sort of long-term leases on lands where the various refugee camps are. But sometimes the conditions were in South India were very dense jungles that weren't, no one was living there. So they had to find a means for clearing land and making the space inhabitable. And so Amchak Rinpoche understood this, that it was going to take some time to make that land inhabitable. But he also knew it was going to take some time to have some sort of perpetuating revenue. And so his idea was a 30-year plan. Imagine that. A 30-year plan of first clearing the field. These are the things that we learn as a spiritual student. First, we have to clear the counter, so to speak, clear the mirror, dust the mirror off. And then he said, we need to plant a very sturdy tree, because you also know that trees that grow very fast, their wood isn't often very strong. And we have to generate, we have to plant something that will bear fruit. And so his idea was to plant groves and groves and groves of mango trees. And that is such a delicious fruit, but it took that long. But he had that vision, and that has generated revenue to help the government, help the monasteries, help the people when they come. But it wasn't like, oh, we have to do something tomorrow. He had a long-range view. And now they've been there how many years in India? 60 years, Jeff?
Yeah,
since 1959. So, you know, it was a long-range view, and it also showed his insight that this isn't going to be a short stay. We have to really figure out how we're going to live here. So that's an example. Is it a good example? Does it help? Mm-hmm. Okay, because I diverge, so let me know. And just reel me in, just like you said, we can't hear you, Nuri. It's like losing the point, Nuri. It's okay. So he says, he's urging us to have this patience. And again, but in order for a tree to be fruitful, it can take many years. This is spiritual sowing. It might take a much longer time in some cases. In some cases, the next day. There are some plants and trees which come quicker, others which take time to bear fruit. But still, the spiritual sowing has its result, and a sure result. Never, therefore, to doubt, to be discouraged, to give up, but to continue and persevere on the path. So I thought we could use a practice here that would help us in kind of an abstract, symbolic way, grasp this teaching. And the sacred word is Matin. Matin, it's one of the divine names that is revealed in the Quran. And I just want to say to those that are new, why we use these words. First of all, they have a very long, a long history of vibration. So we're kind of tuning to that sympathetic vibration. And just like in all the bells and whistles are going on. And just like in, I was raised Catholic, and when I was a girl, we still used Latin. It's very beautiful to chant the Mass in Latin. And it was good for our education, especially if we had an inclination towards science and math or language arts. You know that those are the Latin is often, Latin and Greek are the roots of many languages, and so for us to move on. If you're entering, please mute your microphone on whatever we're on, Zoom. So we use these words because it's another way of also bypassing sometimes experiences defy language. Have you not had something like that where you can't quite explain an experience that happened to you, or maybe you don't want to because you know no one would understand? Right? So this is a way of kind of bypassing that rational mind and taking us to another level of vibration and tuning to this level of vibration. And imagining, I say this probably every time I do a class or offer a class, is that I remember in the third grade, one of the nuns teaching us said, never forget, when you breathe in, you are breathing in the molecules that Jesus himself breathed and gave into space. And never forget that you're doing this with all the great saints and masters. And never forget that the music that was once created by Mozart and Bach and Beethoven, it's still in the spheres. Just tune in. Imagine a nun telling you that in the third grade. It kind of changes your life, you know that? It had a profound effect on me. And so now, for the same reason, we use some of these words from these ancient languages. So you might be saying, well, is she going to tell us what this word means? I will. Unlike my teacher, who constantly tested me and told me I had to discover the meaning, which was also a good way. So the short, pithy explanation is mateen is like the steadfast and the firm. But in a deeper way, mateen, this quality teaches us balance and rhythm, which we so desperately need in our lives. It is also this quality of being very dependable and reliable. And it helps us to become not only grounded, and again, those entering, please mute your microphone as you enter, to be grounded in the world, but to be grounded in yourself. And when we're grounded in ourselves, it gives us the kind of the wherewithal or the ground, if you will, to have real integrity. And so mateen is all of these things. It teaches us rhythm and balance and steadfastness and integrity. Okay. Now I want to say the word for you first, and I want you to feel, and maybe we'll do it a few times together. It's an exasperation on the ma, and teen is a little bit shorter. So it's, and we begin the sacred phrase with ya, which is like, oh reverent one, oh divine one, oh divine steadfastness, oh divine rhythm. I invoke you from the universe to reside and resonate within me. That's where it's an invocation. The ya is all of those things. So we say, it will sound like this, ma-teen. It's sometimes, you know, it's dialectical, by the way. Sometimes I've heard it ma-teen, but in classical Arabic, it's ma-teen. Now listen, ma-teen, how that feels different. Ma-teen. Ma-teen. M-A-T-I-N, M-A-T-I-N. And you see with the ma, there's kind of this expansion and openness, like an embrace. And then with the teen, exactly, Sharif has it, there's a rising out of that. So it's this expansion, and not necessarily a contraction, but a lifting. Ma-teen. Always those words with yin bring you up more into these upper centers. And the ma is really this heart, solar plexus area gets activated, vibration. Okay? So let's do this very slow. We'll say 11 times, and I'll guide us through that. We'll say ya ma ti. And we can do it on kind of a chant so we can feel that vibration. Ya ma ti. 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 Ya ma ti.
Last time.
Ya ma ti. Now we whisper. Mati. Just Mati.
Ah,
Last time. Now just breathe it in and feel the vibration inwardly of this expansion and arising steadfastness, and yet this kind of elevation of consciousness, integrity, groundedness, but big picture view. Namati. And now we move on to the second piece of advice. Now, the second necessity for the Mirid is the study part. It must not be a study only as reading of a book. It must be a study, listen to this, of engraving on one's heart. Of engraving on one's heart. I mean, the soulful prayer that's really, you know, bringing out a certain quality or vibration. And yet it's also study. And so he says, it must be a study as engraving on one's heart, the gathas, the gathikas, all the literature that's given. And if you're on the Sufi path, you know that there's a series of readings and teachings that are given that are progressive. And he says, all the literature that is given. And then he says, however simple it might seem to grasp it, because haven't you picked up, those of you that have studied immersion, a book and it's like, I know that. I feel just that way. Yeah, that's exactly right. Am I right? It's so beautiful because that's kind of what draws us into the path. You know, it's that calling of having that resonant vibration. And yet, if you're like me, I pick up the book 10 years later or 20 years later or 30 years later and I look at it and I think, my gosh, that isn't, I mean, every time it reveals something else if we really study. And for me, I'm quite a boring person because people say, have you read this book or have you read that book or do you know about this or that? And it's like, I'm so sorry. I have a tendency to study one subject. It really is. That has been that way for me. So I hope I don't appear to be one-dimensional, but I might. And then he says, it's just a phrase now. And Mershav used to give these phrases, and he used to give those in English to his students. It's just a phrase now. After 6 months, the same phrase will flourish, just like those seeds that we planted. Nurture it, we water it, we give it sun. It will flourish. Then there will come branches, and then flowers, and then fruits. In that phrase, it is a simple phrase, but it is a living phrase. The more you study and grasp it, the more your heart will be creative. Isn't that beautiful? The more your heart will be creative, you will discover new things about it. And therefore, do not consider it only a study, but a meditation. Even in your studies. And so again, that Mersha talks about that, those different levels of meditation, concentration first, excuse me. So that would be the reading of the teachings. And then pray harder. And then contemplation, thinking about it. How does this apply to my world, to me, to my inner thinking, to the way I am with people, to the way I view the world? You know, how does, you know, contemplate it. And then meditation, which is almost letting go. It's like those three phases that we just did with the practice. First, we say it aloud. It's quite literal. And then we whisper it. It becomes more subtle. And then we go into the silence. And it's almost like we let go of it all together. And yet, it gives it the opportunity to arise. It's very beautiful. So now I want to stop here with another practice, and we'll revisit these practices and we'll review the five aspects. But there's this subtlety of engraving on the heart, of bringing to aliveness these teachings. There's another, it's actually a pair of these sacred words. And one is Latif, and one is Kabir. You kind of like you're clearing your throat. It's not a sound we make. I don't know, do you have that sound in Japanese? I don't think so. But if you think about this sound, again, look at Latif, what it's doing. Latif. It wasn't until I started going back and studying, I started to prepare this teaching some months ago, I thought, oh my goodness. These are kind of the same sound codes. They're doing the same thing. They have the same vibration. They're different words and different aspects, but la ti, same. Ha, it's a guttural sound. Ha, Kabir, K-H. It sounds very harsh, but think of it. You ever anticipated a beautiful bottle of wine? And then the bouquet comes up. And then you taste it. Or it might be the anticipation of a flower. It starts to emerge and it's beautiful just as a bud, but beer, all of a sudden it opens in its radiance and reveals itself. So it's, we can think of this as almost like lifting the lid of the heart. Ha. If you're entering the room, please, if you're entering the Zoom room, please mute your microphone. And here we'll try to figure out those sounds so that we don't have them in the future. But here we're using it as like the little church bell to call us to pray harder. So, Lati Khabir. And again, Kha. Beer. It was the hardest thing when I lived in the Middle East, the family I was with brought a really good translator from the embassy to try to teach me Arabic. I'm a little stupido, so it takes me a while to get languages. But these sounds, the aspiration, the ends of the words, Allah, not Allah, Allah, it's an H at the end, Khabir. These, I mean, I had to do things like, okay, you're going to take this mirror and I want to see your breath on the mirror. You know, so try it because it's different. You know, our dear friend Murshid Kabir is K-H, not K-A, but we always say Kabir instead of Kabir. It's just not natural for us. Totally different meaning of Kabir to Kabir, by the way. Okay, so let's give it our best shot. And we're going to say it again 11 times aloud with Yah. Now, do you want to know what these words mean? Would that be helpful? So Latif is subtle, but it's not a weakness. It's the kind of subtlety that has the ability to get in to the most subtle realms of the mysteries and revealing hidden knowledge. That can't be done in any other way than a subtle quality and maybe even a receptivity to what's wishing to always be. Everything's there wanting to be revealed, but are we subtle enough to observe it and feel it? And then Kabir is a depth of mystical insight. So these two beautiful sacred names are often coupled together because they work together in this way. So again, they work, Latif works with Kabir, and it uncovers and reveals subtleties and mysteries and things that might be obscure to our ordinary perception. But it's good for us to be in a subtle state. Is he okay there, David? Is Sharif? Is he?
Okay.
I don't want him to crouch. So we'll do Ya Latif, Ya Khabir. And a deep breath in together. Ya Latif, Ya Khabir. 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 And now we just whisper, becoming more subtle, more intimate with these special qualities, and we just whisper, Latif. Last time. And now just silently breathing in these sacred vibrations. Ya Latif, Ya Khabir. Hazra the Night Khan goes on in this paper and says, the third most important thing in the life of a spiritual student is to live a life of balance between activity and repose, of regularity, not too much work, and not too much rest, a balance between activity and repose. Is that a challenge for anyone? So I guess the secret would be how to do that in the midst of everyday life. Take a few minutes to turn inward. And I also have often said, it's not really like a seesaw where we can necessarily find that. At times, the seesaw may be very, very active. And then we know, we plan. We say, okay, I know that in this much time, this very intense activity will cease, and I make a commitment to myself, to my inner self, to give myself some deep breath and put it aside. If you're entering the room, please mute your microphone, lower left corner of the Zoom chat room. So there are times where, you know, if we look at the farmer, for example, again, you know, they have to really, there are certain times they have to prepare that ground, put those seeds in and do certain things. And then it's you tend to it, but there's a bit before the harvest. And then there's another busy time. We have it in the cycles of our year. We don't always observe it. We have it, women have it in the cycles of their lives. We don't always observe it. But it's good. Let me tell you, retirement's helpful. Because you get to start to see the patterns of how very busy we can make ourselves. And the trying to slow it down in a reasonable way so that there's a balance too. Because I think there's something to that. One of my dear friends, Aretha Miller, who passed away some years ago, but she was one of the senior students of Pier Goliath, and she would always say, it's very important not to change a student's rhythm too quickly. But you know, you can see that also even in one's health. One has a tendency towards low blood pressure, you wouldn't want to bring it up too quickly. So there are these, or blood sugar issues, to switch that too quickly. So everything in kind of balance and moderation, that's what Mateen is teaching us, right? And to tune into the subtleties, that's what Latif and Kabir are teaching us. And here now, Murshid is saying this activity and repose, giving it rest. Those that are involved in tax season, it's becoming crazy busy for them. You know, accountants and CPAs and people that prepare people's taxes, perhaps us ourselves preparing to get the taxes done. I know how many of you have very busy. You're always busy, thank God, but you're busier sometimes of the year. And then you always do very well about making that commitment to take a little break. It's important that you do that and understand that.
Sorry, might the dog be in front of the microphone? We can hardly hear you since he has been moving.
Maybe, Joe, can you call Parker? Or me. Has he been panting too hard? He's a very happy dog. He's excitable. There was a delivery truck that came out here, and his main job is to watch the house and alert us when anyone's near. So he's doing his job. But now he's gone with Joe. Thank you. Thank you, Jalal, for letting us know. So again, this balance of activity and repose, and Murshid goes on, because when we put this idea before the world, we shall be responsible to show it in our lives. If you're just entering the Zoom chat room, would you please mute your microphone in the lower left corner? Thank you. So if we're trying to bring people into contemplative life and world and help them understand that, it's good to show that, to give an example. Here's another example. When we used to go to Sufi retreats when we were younger, I used to not want to miss one single thing. Right? Mm-hmm. I was a lot younger then. And I would drive myself crazy getting to this class and that class, being up to the earliest class, going to bed after the latest class. Oh, and was there anything going in the kitchen afterwards that I didn't want to dare miss out on? I'd have to go there and see what people were talking about. Well, not now. Part of that has to do with age, but part of it has to do with understanding everything I need to know, I will know. And I don't need to know everything. And it also becomes a kind of spiritual materialism, that kind of grasping. Those of us that have been on the path know that. We didn't want to miss anything. I'm going to go on that retreat to here and there. Now, not so much. But we become more settled. We become maybe a little more inner in our practice. And we realize that, you know, not everything is for everybody. And showing that as an example, I think, is good to people. You know, I noticed that the senior teachers, when I was younger and they visited, they would come to a little bit of the evening program and go take their rest. It was a good example, and it didn't go without me noticing that. You know, and I thought they were trying to provide a kind of example. So these kinds of things, these balances, you know, I think there's often the tendency when we have our retreats or our camps or our gatherings that we have to keep people busy all the time. I wonder why. Do we think they'll get in trouble? Like, people don't have to be busy all the time. We need to teach them that contemplative quietude. People, I think, come to those retreats sometimes for it. And it's one of the third point of worship, is this activity and repose. So therefore, our lives must be balanced, as balanced as possible. Besides that, in eating, in drinking, there must be a kind of moderation. Okay, Thanksgiving. I mean, how many times I finally learned I am so uncomfortable when I eat too much. It just makes me miserable. And there's no joy in that, you know. And so learning how to moderate that, you know, learning how when certain foods maybe make us feel a certain way. You know, we want to eat some because our body is very happy when we eat them. And some we realize, oh, I should have only a little bit of that because maybe if too much, it'll make me, you know, like too much coffee can make you a little crazier, too much sugar or whatever, you know, can make you tired in the end, if you give you a little pep. But anyway, all of these things in balance. And here's the thing about Mershon. I've heard these stories. He would tell one person, you must eat a little piece of chocolate every day. It's very good for your health. And then he'd tell another person, you must never eat chocolate. It's not good for your health. And then if the students start comparing, Mershon said this to me and Mershon said that to me. You know, it's like, wait a minute. Take the teaching that's given to yourself. You know, it's not the same for everybody. Some things are good for some and some are good for others. Not everybody can take that. You, through Latif, you tune in and you feel what's good for you, what's not good for you. Oh, are you? Oh, I see, Jalal. I thought you were frozen. You're holding a microphone? Okay. May I serve you?
I'm afraid that the volume of your microphone has been automatically be adjusted downwards because of the dog. Would you check the volume of your microphone, maybe?
Oh, sure. Because
it has become very weak here now.
Okay. Excuse me. Now, this is a different computer. I have to. It seems quite loud. Let me see here. Thank you so much. It seems quite loud. I'll try to speak up. I sometimes get.
This is a lot better now.
Yeah, I'm standing right on top of the computer. I can just stay like this all the time.
Just stay there. Thank you.
I really will make an effort to try to speak up. I can sometimes get very Latif with my voice. Can you all hear me back there? You can give me the high sign too. Thank you. Is it in the same position or did I move it? You want to move it? So we're going to try to move the computer even closer. See if that helps a little bit. I don't know why the image isn't coming back. You think? We're seeing Sheila Cahill, the name. Are you muted, Sheila?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello?
Hi.
Go ahead. I'm muted.
There we go. All right.
You're still quite quiet, though.
Am I?
Yeah.
Okay, there's one other thing. Terry, could you come on? Or Joe, there's that snowball microphone there. We're going to figure it out. I appreciate everyone's patience and working with us on this. And your microphone there is as high as it can be?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, we're going to try it. Yeah.
I've got it at 100%.
Okay, I'm going to just try to speak up as best I can. And you just pay attention as best you can. And we'll have it recorded.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Is there a volume here? One more thing I'll check here is my sound.
It's very quiet. I think it's all the way up. Okay. Has that
That's way better.
Okay. Thank you so much. I see what I need to do now, and I'll leave it set like that on this computer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm very happy to learn. So we're all learning together. So again, the third most important thing is this activity and repose. Oh, and by the way, this is all, you know, coming to you without the high-end cameras and stuff. So some people's classes cost $10,000 a class to bring to you. We do it for free. So you have to help us learn a little bit, okay? So we're very low tech, and we're trying to use the systems that are available to make things available. And I do appreciate you helping me and being patient with this process. We will get it resolved, and it'll seem more seamless. And therefore, we will persevere. So our lives must be as balanced as possible. Besides that, in eating, in drinking, there must be a kind of moderation, a kind of consideration from the meditative point of view. Because for spiritual growth, a certain food is more recommended than another. And therefore, we in the spiritual path cannot always be neglectful of that question. And I will say, on behalf of Hazard and Icon, he didn't have any real strong prescriptions. You should be a vegetarian, or you should only, but he did make a great emphasis on rhythm in life, and kind of keeping a routine. And so that is something that I think we can, and a balance, you know. Balance and rhythm were kind of, in many ways, his keynote. If you study the teachings, it comes up again and again. The middle way, that path. So let's go back to that practice, that sort of rhythm and balance and steadfastness and groundedness of Mateen. Let's just do that again together. Because this activity and repose, this balance, this rhythm, it's very important in everyone's life, no matter who we are, no matter what we do, no matter what path we're on, it's always good to strive for a kind of balance. Our bodies are even made that way. We're symmetrical. We take a step, and then it's good to take another step. We breathe in. It's good to breathe out, and then in again. So these kinds of things are very natural. We do them all the time. We don't think much about it. But it is very good to kind of bring it into our awareness.
Yamati.
Yamati. Yamati. Yamati. Yamati. Yamati. Yamati. Yamati. Yamati. Yamati.
We're moving on to the fourth piece of advice. And Mersha spends a lot of time, more than any other statement that he gives us, on this fourth item. So let's take some time to go through it. He says, and now there becomes the fourth question. How must our attitude be towards others? Towards other students on the path, our attitude must be affectionate sympathy. Towards people who are not on this path, our attitude must be tolerant sympathy. The best thing in the world is not to force upon others what we understand and what we believe. By forcing upon forcing it, our viewpoint, upon others, we only spoil them. And it could also be the teachings. We only spoil them. It and them. It and them could be people, and it and them could be referring to the teachings. So I'll read that phrase. By forcing it upon others, we only spoil them. By discussing, arguing, we do not accomplish anything. What is needed is sympathy. And then the question comes, what's sympathy? Because I don't know if you've ever been in a situation in your life where you needed a kind of understanding and support, but a sympathy in a certain way almost could be condescending. Have you ever had that experience? Mm-hmm. So a sympathy where we tune in but not condescend is very important. Anyone that's gone through health challenges, or has someone close to them that's gone through health challenges, or if you've endured the loss of a loved one, you know that it's certain kinds of sympathy aren't really helpful. You understand what I'm talking about? So we want to be sure that we don't have a kind of piety and condescension towards people, but a true sympathy. I think Mershak would really agree to that. I think he always, from what I've been told from Peer Vilayat and Peer Hidayat, both, you know, their father had such a generous spirit. You know, we see him as very one-dimensional in photographs. He looks a certain way. But they said his father, their father was always laughing and smiling. And when people came to them depressed or upset, he always could turn that around. But again, I think we just see Mershad in these certain pictures and we think that's how he was, but it's such a two-dimensional view of him. So I share that because I think that's important to remember. He was a real life human being, a household and children and wife and responsibilities, all kinds of things. Mersha goes on in this same subject to say, for a Murid, a student, it is most advisable that the student must keep the conversation limited so as to not say things which may seem to others too occult, too mystical, or too spiritual. So what is he telling us there? Be ordinary. Be natural. Don't try to be special. Just be. Our conversation must be like an ordinary conversation. If one can only talk about simple things of everyday life, there are so many things that we shall have enough subjects to speak over with others. Ideas of the air must be left to the air. Standing on the earth, we must talk of everyday life, leaving every individual free as we like to be left free ourselves. This subject sometimes comes up for me, especially with young students, young people coming to the path, where they all of a sudden want to share everything they're learning, and it worries people around them. Their families, for one. It's like, oh my God, are they getting drug off to these camps and getting programmed? I mean, think about it. It would be frightening for a parent. I can understand that. And I always say, don't just be a kind person, a nice person, a considerate person. That's what the teachings are aiming towards, just like in any path. You know, those are the basic tenets. Be kind, be generous, help others, don't hurt them. You know, treat others as we would like to be treated. It's not really complicated. It's like His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, really, my religion is kindness. Not treating others as we wish to be treated. Love our neighbors as ourselves. The golden rules we learn. So not to seem special, or we have some special formula or potion or special magic words or whatever. I mean, it's just, I remember, I think actually Mersha Hadayat was sitting in this very chair, and he said to me, it was their first time they had come to visit, and he said, of course now it's a little bit funny with our sound problems here, but now I think we have those resolved. But he said, I'm so glad you don't speak so softly. You know, people think being spiritual means to speak softly. He said, I can't hear them. I have trouble hearing. And he said, I just wish people could learn to be normal. That's being spiritual. Be who you are. Be normal. Be ordinary. We don't have to be extraordinary. Just be ordinary. People relate to that.
And I'm remembering he also said, this is one thing that sticks in my mind. You don't have to be spiritual. You are spiritual.
That's right.
That's right.
What is it? We don't need to be, what is that saying about the angels and the, we don't have to try to be angels. We're angels in human body or something like that. You've heard that. There's a quote, but anyway. It's just being real. Mershita Aziza said, could we get those caps that people wear that just says, be normal? We should get be normal with the Sufi emblem on them. So these are people that have been on the path a very, very long time. That's their advice to us. So in this piece of advice, it's not talking about things. There's someone that's online here. This is for you. You had communicated to me that this is how it was when you were first a young student, that other people wanted to chat after the class so much, and you felt the need to be silent. Mershit speaking to you, you understood that as a young student. Take that deeply in your heart and know that. And then Mershit goes on to say, The word Sufism, by the word Sufism, is meant keeping cover over the hidden laws of nature, which are meant to be covered. By the word Sufism is meant keeping the cover over the hidden laws of nature, which are meant to be covered. As soon as one uncovers them, it means, in the first place, one does not know their value. Then a person goes no further, for they cannot go any further. It is the one who knows their value who will go further. Now, this is a very interesting statement. It's very subtle. I think it's rather esoteric. Did it strike any of you that way? Like, the words are simple, but what does Marcia really mean? By the word Sufism, it is meant keeping the cover over the hidden laws of nature, which are meant to be covered. So here's a practical example, let's say. If any of you know, for example, Einstein, right? He would see things and then he would try to share them with people, and people thought he was either very disrespectful towards his field of study or he was a little crazy. You know that, right? Right? If you've studied him or read anything or seen anything about him. He had to learn how to take these very abstract concepts and make them quite ordinary for people to understand. And so in those ways, it's like we can kind of tune ourselves and tune the environment in a certain way by understanding, first of all, how to use everyday language. Don't impose one's belief on other people. Respect theirs. Marcia always did that. I know His Holiness does, and all the great teachers that I've met have. There's a kind of simplicity and purity in those beings that we could only hope to discover and be. But also, when things become revealed to us, and they do on the spiritual path, we start to see into the inner causes of things and to the inner, we become maybe more perceptive about people and their what's behind what appears, as even Arabi would say. But they don't need to be brought to the fore. They can be tended to, just like a very simple garden. And the laws of nature are still being discovered. Think about it. We are still discovering what's going on there. I mean, Einstein had it right. I mean, that Big Bang happened, and it's all still happening out there, and we're here. And the past is in the future. Think about that one. And it's still unfolding. There's something incredibly metaphysical about that. When you think about it, Pierre Vilayet loved that subject of math and science. He brought that a lot into spirituality. And I will say, I don't know, for those of you that are online, some of you, I sent that book, Kavshan Lajub, in a PDF. It is spoken about in that. That's the oldest treatise, Persian treatise on Sufism. These subjects are covered there too, in a very subtle way. So the laws of nature can't necessarily be separated from the laws of our spirituality. Because why? We are.
They're one and the same.
We are nature. So self-discovery reveals everything. That's why it's so important to look within. To thine own self be true. Okay, there's still more on this subject that Marcia may reveal. If I've confused you, perhaps Marcia will help us here. I'll read that phrase again. By the word Sufism is meant keeping the cover of the nature, the hidden laws of nature, which are meant to be covered. As soon as one uncovers them, it means, in the first place, one does not know their value
then a person goes no further, for they cannot go any further. It is the one who knows their value who will go further. Here's another example. The minute we concretize around an idea, then we have to break through the concrete to expand to a new idea. Dare I say, building the wall just makes people, it might be hard, but they're going to want to figure out a way around that wall. So the minute we get concretized and we see the world as this view and we start to make everything fit into that, well, we may have to break that all apart in order to grow and move and live again. There was a good book, and I mentioned that because Joe and I were having a conversation today about people that get, you know, like scientists, they postulate an idea and then all their research goes towards trying to prove that idea. But what if the idea, the premise is wrong? That's what I'm saying here. What if it's really wrong?
Then what happens is you cannot see evidence of a correct idea or a,
right,
this being science, more accurate.
Right. So the idea is to kind of always keep questioning and remain open and curious. That's one of the things that the Buddhists do there. We remain curious. So asking the, you know, instead of the it is, it's like, is it? You know, it's like, turn it around. It is. Turn it around. Is it? So think about that. Staying loose around those edges. Pierre Lyot again used to talk about it as being kind of amorphous, like letting our whole being be kind of loose and open. Is that the right word? Kind of, you know, and so that we can change and evolve and things can come in and go out, but we don't have to fixate around them. He would call that being sclerosed. You know that word? Yeah, he discouraged that. So Murshid goes on in this to just say, so you can quite see that it is the path of silence. The more we keep our lips closed, the more the way is open. The more doors are open for us. The attitude itself opens them. We do not need to open them. We only need to expect them. We only need to expect them. Again, that's the idea of what we focus on becomes clear in our reality. So what are we expecting? What do we expect? That idea can become very clear and it can manifest in view. Our attitude with others must therefore be humble, unpretentious, and ordinary. She's not in the view, but when you look in the dictionary, this is who you see. She is humble, unpretentious, and she's not quite ordinary, but she tries to let us see her in that way, but she's quite extraordinary. Known her a long, long time, longer than her husband has. And I can say she's also consistent. She's that Martine. She's also Latif. She's very subtle. But she's also very deep, like Kabir. Gemma has the good qualities. Look at her if you're looking for an example of those practices. So there, and she's a good student, that's what I will say. Oh, I was having a little trouble with my tummy earlier this week, and we had a plan to go somewhere together, and I had to cancel at the last minute, and then I said,
And by the way, you might have to do this class, so I'm sending you these teachings. And then my husband, Joe, said, well, that's one way to get her to study. She's a very good student. She's a very good teacher as well. So the practice that goes along with this, this idea of being subtle and looking into the hidden meaning of things, they're all these practices are related and support each other. And this practice is Bari, B-A-R-I, with a little apostrophe afterwards. And this is the evolver. So if we want to evolve, we don't want to concretize. We want to kind of be able to keep moving and growing and learning and, you know, be agile, really, in some ways. So this is what Bari is. And it's also, it means to persist in our searching. You know, what are we expecting? What are we wanting to create in a reality? And then it also is this search for knowledge that's hidden in the divine secrets until they're realized with clarity. So again, Murshid said, hidden in nature. Oh, we take it as this way, but if we look deeper, is there something more being revealed? Murshid also, in one of the Sufi truths, there's only one true holy manuscript, or holy book, the manuscript of nature, which reveals everything to the seeking heart. I'm paraphrasing, but you all know that quote. And I was thinking of another quote that Pir Vilayat often used, and I thought it was Bastami that he was quoting. But when I looked it up, and this is so beautiful because I think this is Bari, the essence of Bari. I was a hidden treasure who wanted to be known. Well, who is the I here? Who is the big I? You know, God is the hidden treasure wanting to be known. And where is God? In the heart of every human being. And even if the individual, for some reason, isn't self-aware of that, we can be and love them no matter what, in spite of everything. It is certainly those most difficult situations that give us the opportunity to grow the most. Think of it. Everything in your life that's been very difficult has been a chance for extreme growth and self-examination and growing awareness. We don't have to seek that out. It comes in life. But we often become stronger and wiser because of it. I was a hidden treasure and I wanted to be known. And so Bari is like keeping up an activity of discovering and uncovering the essence of a thing until the essence is rendered free from anything that obscures it. This deep wisdom, mind, and understanding and insight. It's to wake up and then not go back to sleep again, inwardly or in our awareness and comprehension. Shall we do the practice together? These practices promise us a lot. And again, notice the sound. Ba-ri, ma-tin, la-ti. They're all going in this same direction.
Yabari, 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 Yabari. Yabari. Yahari. Yahari.
Last time.
Yahari.
And now we just whisper, Bari. Yahabari. We are finally arriving at the fifth thing that is necessary for a new read. And now the fifth thing. We must not leave out our meditation and prayers, and we must not just leave them for fixed times when we do them. So those of you on the path know Murshid has prescribed times of day when he suggests that we do our practices. And here he's saying, not just for those times, all the time, 24/7, as they say in the advertisements. So he says, we must not leave our meditation and prayers just for those fixed times when we do them, because that is only the winding of the thing. It's only the beginning. The setting of the pendulum. But in our everyday life, we ought to bring the sense of these practices into our action. In everything we do at home or outside, we must use that latent power and inspiration aroused by our meditations. We should make use of it. By practicing to make use of it, we shall benefit ourselves and others by all we are doing. Now with this word, these words, I close my conversation. And Murshid closes with these words, God bless you. So as a quick review, and we will make this paper and available to you all, everyone that would like to follow up. But just to review, the first thing is, does anyone remember? Some people were taking notes. First thing to remember is, or necessary?
Consistency.
Okay. Yeah. First thing is before consistency.
Do your practice.
Keep up the practices.
We're doing that consistently.
And doing that, that's what I meant. That's exactly right. And the second thing? Not that's coming up. Hold on to that.
Study.
Study. Contemplation and meditation of your study. So not just reading words, but really thinking about it. Really. Then going deeply and really considering it quite deeply. And now, what's next, Mariam?
Balance
and repose. It's very interesting because they kind of are in an order. First you have to do it, then you have to think about it, and then you have to not just do it all the time, but allow it to be integrated. You know, these are all things of life. And then the other thing, when he talked about our relationship with other people. Well, there was a word sympathy. That he used. Sympathy. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that mean? I mean, what does that mean to a musician that plays instruments that whenever you pluck a string, the other strings start to vibrate with sympathetic vibration? You know, he played the instruments of the east, the tambura, the sitar, even those bowls, I can't remember the name, but the ringing bowls, and they would be close together and they would start the other
resonance.
The resonance vibration, the sympathy, yeah. So he understood that from that mystical sound perspective, but we are also all of that too. We have our own vibrations. And then remembering, you know, this idea of this hidden treasure. We seek for knowledge, we want to acquire the knowledge, and then hopefully we integrate it enough that we are the knowledge, that we are that. And then the last thing was not doing practices at one time a day, but what?
All the time.
All the time. Bring them into mindfulness all the time. I think we've managed to get through yet another online class. And I would like to invite anyone that's joining us outside of our space here, if you'd like to offer comment or have questions, please. It would be a good time now. Otherwise, we can close with a prayer and let everyone get on with their evenings and their days. It's been wonderful having you all here and having you take the time to be with us. Really very precious. I just wish to take a moment that if there's anything that's been of wholesomeness here, that we allow widening circles to move out, touching all those beings that need a quiet place to be with friends, good company, peace, rest, good food, precious companions, sympathetic souls. And may others benefit from what we do far and wide. And we thank you, Marcia, for taking birth and inspiring us and bringing us together to hear your advice. Those of us that know the prayer Khatun, shall we say it together? O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness, teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being. One last word of Mershit's about the prayers. It is so profound when I think about the meaning of these prayers. He talks about the morning prayer and the afternoon prayers being the two pillars on which this lineage of Sufism stands. He talks about the psalm as being the radiant, jalal, expressive aspect, and of Salat as being this more jamal, receptive, beautiful aspect. And he separates Ketum altogether because he says that each line of that prayer is a metaphysical reality. The prayer we just said. So I offer that to you because if you think of that, you may want to just take a line a week of the prayer. A metaphysical reality. How beautiful is that? And I think we can trust that as he brought those prayers to us. So again, I thank all of you that are there and far and wide from us. Where is the person from the farthest? We have people in Africa. Kareem, you're there in Ghana.